Trevor Urish. Hello.
Howdy.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you all doing?
Very happy to be speaking to you. So we're going to be talking to Avi about the difference in how it manifests, the radicalization between Sunni Muslims and radicalization in the Shia. But just before you tell us that, tell us about your background and your experience living with radicals. Because you did. Who did you live
well,
with?
Well, I wouldn't say I lived with radicals. I was a student at Al-Azhar University, which, as you know, is the preeminent school of Sunni Islamic learning in the Arab world. It's where half of Al-Qaeda graduated from, including their leader today. I also had the opportunity to interview the Muslim Brotherhood, members of Hezbollah in Lebanon, and spent some time in the West Bank and Gaza Strip.
Were they aware that you were Jewish with Israeli connections when you studied there?
You know, at Al-Azhar, that was for me, when I was a student at Al-Azhar, really presented myself as the Quran likes to talk about, a mu'min billah, as a believer in God. And that was sufficient, as you probably know, when you spend time in the Muslim world, one of the first questions you often get asked is, what is your religion and where are you from? And that is how I presented myself.
Gosh, that is interesting. I didn't know that. You know, for those of us being to Israel, we're not exposed to that side of it, Avi. So this is really interesting.
Yeah. Avi,
you know, the Muslim world really, I mean, has been, the Muslim world, you know, the Jewish people have, up until the 13th, 14th century, 80% of our people resided in the Muslim world. And certainly as a place that has a significant number of Christians, and I would even say to a certain degree Jews, our people are not strangers to that part of the world. I mean, we still have, as we talked about last week, a large Jewish community in Iran, a large Jewish community in Turkey. We have Jewish communities in Morocco, Algeria, Tunisia, Egypt, Bahrain. There's a Jewish member of parliament of Bahrain. In fact, the former Bahraini ambassador to Washington is a Jewish woman. As we talked about last week, there's a Jewish member of parliament in Iran. You have a Jewish member who ran for parliament in Tunisia in the last election cycle. You know, we have the Jewish people are really everywhere. Represents one of our great strengths is that we really are everywhere.
Do I pursue this line or do we go into studies?
No, we can pursue this line. We could talk about radicals next week, but I mean,
can we talk about radicals? And the reason I ask you this is that is a promise that we've made to our listeners. So if we've said that we're going to be talking about the differences between radical Sunnis and radical Shia, then that's what I think we need to do. Okay.
Your call. Your dance floor,
Kevin. All right. So what is the difference between, you know, how does it manifest differently between radical Sunnis and radical Shia?
So let's just start with the Sunni world because it really is the dominant faction. About 80% of the Muslim world are Sunnis. And radical groups, just so that I'm clear that I'm talking about, are Al-Qaeda, Hamas, and others that really do play this role. And they really see this as a real state game. There's the abode of Islam, and then there's the abode of war. Anywhere that is the Muslim world, in other words, really from Morocco to Afghanistan and from Yemen to the Caucasus, that is the area that is understood as the abode of Islam, where the majority of individuals residing there are Muslims. And the whole goal of radical Islamic Sunni movements is to expand that territory into one united world of radical Islam that is resided over by a caliph. They're relatively easy to understand. The radical Shia, they are much more complicated. I want you to think about three concentric circles. In the innermost concentric circle, we have the great enemies of radical Shia Islam, which are the great Satan and the little Satan, primarily the United States and Israel. Then the second concentric circle are any countries that occupy land. And there we're really talking about a number of countries that are occupying land today. And then finally, you have those that are under the thumb of Western society. And that primarily is Western Europe. And then when you look at the goal of radical Shia Islam is to really create theocracies that are modeled after Iran today. And Iran really leads the pack on that. And it's basically pushing its vision in places like Bahrain, Yemen, and Lebanon. And Hezbollah is their most successful sub-state actor, which at this point today really has a vice grip over the country. And again, the goal is to create a mulletocracy. When you look at Iran today, the idea is to create, borrowing the term, minimis, really a clone of Iran around the world. And their whole motto, when you listen to speeches given by Khomeini, Khamenei, or Hassan Nasrallah, who's the head of Hezbollah, is the resistance against oppression and occupation. They really are seized with the idea of oppression and occupiers and the idea of resistance. Resistance being engaging in suicide bombing and all means war. Resistance against oppressors. When you think about the idea of Marxism, which was workers of the world unite, here it really is uniting those that are oppressed versus the oppressors, the chief oppressors being the United States and the state of Israel. And while Sunnis want a caliph at the head, like a pope-like figure, the goal of radical Shia, again, is this idea of sub-state actors, but both wish to have Islamic regimes that are based on Sharia law. And there we are seeing those today. We're seeing that in places like Iran. We're seeing that in Saudi Arabia. The goal of both is to bring into existence Sharia states. And what most people don't understand is that 9/11, the September 11th attacks, were really al-Qaeda's way of bringing into existence a Sharia state order. By attacking the United States, the idea was that we in the United States would remove our troops and it would be easier for them to put into place Sharia states. It didn't exactly end up working out that way, although one could argue, and certainly this game is far from over. We saw in Egypt in 2011 the Muslim Brotherhood taking hold of power. That was part of Osama bin Laden's grand vision of really bringing these states into existence.
So interesting. I mean, one doesn't really think, for us, it changed the world. 9/11 was the day that the world changed in everything, And yet the motivating intention behind it, that didn't change anything. Interesting, Avi. It was a much longer conversation.
It hasn't changed. And if you look, and if you look at even organizations like Hamas, right, their whole goal was to destroy the state of Israel, in large part because they want to create an Islamic Sharia law state. That is their primary objective. And once you start looking at the region through the prism of Sharia Islamic law and who's working towards achieving those means, you really have your finger on the pulse of what's going through the mind of these radical Islamic organizations, be they Sunni or Shia.
Avi Oresh, thank you very much. That is where we leave it this week. We look forward to speaking to you next week, though.